cure, the only cure available is suicide.
It'll be hell on wheels. It will. It might be time to bail out, like I did in the 90s.
Hey, I got my free learn German app on the phone, and I've been learning all kinds of words every night.
Yeah, that's... well, they need people there. They're hiring like crazy. It seems the economy was doing well. It's trailed off quite a bit lately. But they were taking in a lot of the Spanish young people for a while.
You know, I get all these ads in the email every day, Andy, and one of them I got today said, what was it, 4 day, two nights in Paris and four nights in Barcelona, only $500, including airfare. And I'm thinking, I'll pass on the four nights in Barcelona. Things might, but then I thought again, you know what? I'll probably get myself gassed or sprayed or something. But you know, a little solidarity. It's a matter of global. It's a matter of globalizing these objections to their globalizing of our existence. But I don't
know. That economy out.
Yeah.
So what'd you think of Jamie Dimon today?
Oh, wasn't that just disgusting? Although I did like the fact that there was a little noise made behind him.
Yeah, you feel that cool air going up your rear end?
Well, it smelled a little more like smoke.
Right, he was just blowing that smoke up everybody's rear end in America, man. What lies ahead? What they did was not a hedge. It was pure speculation. There's no question about it.
Yeah, hedge my ass.
Right. They're taking an index of credit default swaps, which means you make a bet that bonds are going to either default or they're going to go down in price considerably because they're in trouble, the company. And they were investing in a CDX.NA.9 something index of credit default swaps, and they were selling it short, meaning instead of betting that this basket of 120 bonds was going to go down in bond value, they were betting, because they were selling it short, that it was going to go up in value. How is that a hedge on Europe? And then they're playing chicken with a bunch of hedge funds who are buying it long. The hedge funds were buying this index of credit default swaps, betting that the bonds would go down in price, and that would make the index actually rise. Don't want to get too complicated here, but so these guys are selling on the J.P. Morgan side, and they kept on selling and selling and selling, and the hedge funds kept on buying and buying, and finally it just exploded because they took the wrong position. They lost so much value because this index kept on rising on them while they were selling it.
You know what, Andy? You said, and you do a magnificent job of explaining how it works. But you remind me, because there's always room for a movie reference on this program, that maybe it's time for us to all sit down and watch that magnificent old Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd vehicle, Trading Places. You remember that, where Eddie Murphy's a homeless guy, and the two 1%ers bet a dollar that they can take him and replace their hotshot trader and make him just as successful as the hotshot? You remember that?
Yeah.
And it all centers around, I think, what was it? Yeah, orange juice futures.
Yeah.
And it's an object lesson in the nature of dirty insider trading and the speculative nature of those markets.
Right.
And if I understand you correctly, what happened is, that speculation got moved over into a commoditized, commoditized wads of bad debt. Is that fair?
Well, it went the wrong way because they were speculating. When you do a hedge, you're doing a trade-off. You expect investments that you own, assets that you own, to be negatively correlated with what you're hedging it with. I mean, one goes up, the other should go down. They shouldn't work in unison, but they should be opposite.
Right, so that you maintain a sort of stasis or equanimity, right?
Right, right. So they equal each other out, and you don't gain or lose. At least you should have a pretty high negative correlation there, one going up, the other going down. So they balance each other out. But that's not at all what was happening here. It got to a point where they were just purely speculating, selling this index short. And they had this guy, Bruno Ipsil, some French guy in London, and his boss, I read articles about his boss was just going crazy, pushing J.P. Morgan to continue the trade. And he was just running roughshod over the people in New York. And this CIO, or a risk officer, chief investment officer, this guy, this woman, Ina something, I forget her name now, but she quit over the whole, but they ran over her, basically, and just kept on this trade going when they should have bailed out a lot. Ina Drew was actually her name. She lost her job. But they just ran over her. And there was no risk management of this process. It was just pure speculation. They thought they could play chicken, and they were just going to play chicken with the hedge funds and try to wear them out until the trade changed in their direction, and it never did. Never went their way, unfortunately. So they were shorting, and they had to have this index go down, but the index kept going up the wrong direction. They kept on losing more and more money. Anyway, it was just a crime. He's there trying to say it's not a hedge. I mean, it's not speculation. It wasn't proprietary trading. It was a hedge. It was not a hedge. That's a lie. Pure speculation. That division had made billions of dollars in trading profit. It was a proprietary trading profit. It's total baloney. Total BS. Did you hear Bitter? Thinking, oh, we don't need regulation. I'm against regulating.
I just wanted to send him back to his nanny prostitute. David Bitter can't open his mouth without... I'm surprised he has the nerve to speak.
What corruption? What sort of corruption that he's even... It's shameful in the United States that he's even in the Senate. What shame? Hey, he just brings complete disdain and, other disgust that he's even in the Senate. Now, what a piece of garbage. The guy should be in jail somewhere. Get out of here. A man like that being in the Senate, please.
Yeah, but remember, IOK, IYAR, Andy.
Yeah, you're a Republican, you can do anything you want.
I mean, over on the House side, remember, Anthony Weiner didn't even actually have sex with anybody.
Well, they had to get rid of him, man, because he was the big single-payer guy. He was keeping the pressure on.
Oh, he got run.
Right, they ran him out of there, I think because of the single-payer stuff. He had to go. He was just too loud, and he was making a lot of the Blue Dogs look bad.
Well, one of the last things he did was, you remember when he mockingly told, when he mockingly told John Boehner to celebrate and enjoy his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do that, something's going to happen, and of course that entire manufactured controversy happened very shortly after he made fun of John Boehner's name. Oh, by the way, I don't know if I mentioned it or not, but that was one of the delightful little moments of merry giggling that went on in Germany. Because I looked at my new friends, my hosts, and I said, I am going to spell you a German family name from the United States, and I would appreciate it if you would be so kind as to give me. And choose any region of Germany you wish, because they kind of made light of the Bavarian accent, for instance, the kind of way I make light of, redneck accent. I got an idea that there was almost a direct one-to-one correlation, but I spelled out Boehner, Andy.
Yes.
And there were two of them, two brilliant young women sitting there, and from different parts of the country. And one of them said, Boehner. And the other one said, Booner. And I said, now this is good network standard pronunciation. Oh, absolutely. They said, why, Bob? How does he pronounce it? I said, this is the third most powerful man in the government. He explained who the speaker is. And they said, we understand. How does he pronounce it? And I said, Boehner. And he's proud to talk about his German heritage. And they said, well, he does not know much about his German heritage if he pronounces it Boehner.
Yeah.
And they kind of made that face, Boehner. And we had a big laugh.
Yeah, Boehner, something like that would probably be the way I would think.
But Boehner is closer than Boehner. we all agreed on that. Hey, Andy, it is good to talk to you, my friend, and I hope we will talk soon.
Yeah, just one other thing. I had to honorably disagree with Albert over the drones. You know, I just can't get behind the killing of U.S. citizens with drone strikes without having some kind of due process.
No, I believe that due process is in order.
Right.
And moreover, the one thing that bothers me most is even if it is an intractable response to an otherwise intractable situation, if the false choice is either we go in with boots on the ground and all-out war and Tomahawk cruise missiles and yada, 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 or we use the drones. The fact of the matter is, when we use the drones, we're still killing children.
Correct.
And now, I don't know if anybody's explained this to the president, because there's not a secretary of Jesus Barack, you know?
Right.
I don't know if anybody says, because, you know, we tried to point this out all during the years of the Iraq War and when George was managing the Afghanistan debacle. We on this side said repeatedly over and over and over again, every time a father carries the 5-year-old limp, lifeless body out of some wreckage, we make certain that there will be at some point in the future, whether it be to one or 1,000, another 9/11. We don't make it more likely, we make it certain.
Right. Yeah, totally agree. We're not making friends. So when you go after Anwar al-Awlaki's 16-year-old son, too, you know, somebody that should have nothing to do with terrorism, I mean, that's, to me, that's just going way over the line. I don't necessarily worry about Obama, but wait till some real hardline right-winger gets the presidency again, starts doing this stuff. You know, we have another Dick Cheney running around making these calls. That's what's really scary. I mean, he set the groundwork for this. And that's the scary part. You're not going to have Obama in there or a Democrat.
Right. I mean, but you know what? The Obama administration use of drones will be, without a doubt, used as justification for ramping up the use of drones. And we will be carrying dead members of wedding parties out of Afghan and Yemeni rubble. We won't see it because the for-profit media won't report it. But it'll be happening with much greater frequency, and we will be that much more hated.
Yeah, you can bet on it. All right, thanks a lot for letting me vent.
Thanks for the input, Andy, about Montana. I really appreciate it. You have a great evening.
Yeah, a little public service notice. Take care.
Absolutely. Bye now. Calling from California, that's our buddy Andy. Going back to Vince's call, Kate notes, good to hear Vince. And she said, I do need to know if his Frosty melts while the folks ahead of him pray up at the drive-up window pray. I think of him every time I pass our local Wendy's. And she notes, you know, Skype sounds better than most cell phones. So, onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so, I just wonder if you checked out that short video I just sent you.
I haven't been able to, simply because it's kind of hard to run video while I'm Yeah, I do some multitasking, but not a lot.
Oh, okay. Well, no, it's a really succinct sort of explanation of the Euro mess. It's the best one I've heard.
Okay, so it's a minute. Shall we run it?
Yeah, because I was like, wow.
Okay, stand by. By the way, this comes under the title Spain, the Beginning of the End.
Right.
And it comes from Daniel Hannan, who's the MEP for Southeast England.
Yeah, I think this is at the European Parliament.
Again. Okay, so MEP, yeah, Member of European Parliament. Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Madam Deputy Speaker, it was only last July that we had these stress tests of all the European banks, and we were told that there was no problem in Spain, certainly none that the national government couldn't look after. We've now had a bailout of €100 billion euros, and Spanish 10-year bonds were at their highest level yesterday since the single currency was launched. So the only impact of this bailout has been to indebt every Spanish household with a further €15,000 debt that they didn't have last week. And where has the money come from? It's come from the other members of the Eurozone, including Cyprus and Italy and so on. Europe is giving itself a transfusion. It's taking blood from one arm and pumping it into the other arm. But the tube is leaky. The liquid is coming out en route. My friends, when are we going to understand that you don't solve a debt crisis with more debt? The euro is the problem, not the solution. We're treating the tumor when we should be treating the patient.
Rather profound.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. You look at the result of these sort of, debt swapping things, like swapping spit, and you're getting nothing because the yield, the cost of the debt that they're trying to sell on the open market is still above 6, which is the whole idea is to bring those prices down because it's not sustainable.
And so, I mean, ultimately, when he talks about Cyprus or Spain or Greece or Italy, right? Well, I guess the question I have to ask is: are we finding out via this experiment, Sandra, that the only way this works is if the nations participating in the currency are inherently stable in the first place?
Well, and also if you agree to a fiscal union too. I mean, this is the whole issue with it. And that means you're talking, I mean, the thing is I'm not too sure where the hell they think they're going with this.
Yeah, so perhaps the question of having a non-sovereign currency but sovereign debt and the two don't match?
Yeah, I mean, Spain is going down the same route as Ireland. And you see the state of Ireland after repeated bailouts of their banking system, by putting the debt onto the government account. I mean, it's just, I don't know, it's just a horror show. I just saw that clip and thought, this is just such a nightmare for, the Europeans for sure, but also the ideology is just sort of eclipsing all rationality. It's stunning.
And the other thing, I just saw this pointed out in the chat room and I thought it rather fascinating. And that's what Benedict at Large pointed out. He said it's not just that the tube is leaking, in Mr. Hannon's analogy. He said it's that somebody is drinking the leak and getting rich off of it.
Well, at some point, though, I think, they're going to have to confront some serious debt write-offs. I mean, I just don't really see... Unless it's just going to devolve into war. I'm sorry to go there, but I'm like, the people, I don't know how much they expect. Those Spanish citizens now are in debt, like he said, more, and they're just going to pile on more debt, and the yields and the costs are going up in Italy. I mean, it is just...
Well, you mentioned the little three-letter word, war.
Well, I don't want to go there.
No, you don't. But the fact of the matter is, for those of us who pay attention to annoying little things like history, it cannot be said that. Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is that there have been wars that, and I kind of alluded to this the other night. There have been wars that have erased entire generations from the European continent that were started over far less.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just, you know, it just seems like all the little band-aids are lasting for less and less time. I mean, this $125 billion is nothing. Whatever gains they thought they'd make in the market has already dissipated from what I can tell. If all the financing costs are at the same or higher than what they were before last weekend. So, anyway, I don't know. I just, you know, all that stuff is just really doing my head in. It's too over the top. But anyway, refound the Bus Boys. That shit is fantastic.
I'm ashamed to say, I listened to them, you know, back in the 80s, and they were an amazing band.
Yeah, well, no, just the irony of minimum wage work is great, because he talks about he works in the kitchen, but he has Jesus or God in him, and rich people must be unhappy. I mean, it's just fantastic sort of piss take on it, but it's just timeless, because you wouldn't know if that song didn't come out the other day. Shit.
And that is the mark of great music.
And then this other song is just it's a piss take too with his coach.
Yeah.
I was just like, what? I've forgotten about that one too.
Yeah, and I know you were sitting there watching the game last night.
No, that shit was, you know, I can't, you know, I have to laugh, you know. I'm, you know, LeBron, it's like, dude, he put on a clinic the other, you know, against Boston, and then this happens. But I'm not going to go too hard on it, because, listen, 7 games they played, and then they have to fly into, you know, okie doke and deal with them people who are like, what, 15? I know they're a bit older, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, it's all in cracking.
No, they're youngins. That team is youngins.
Yeah. And that Durant is like, excuse me? You know? So I kind of, you know, I...
Yeah, somebody carry a letter to LeBron that Kevin Durant ain't laying down.
Oh, God. So we'll see how this pan... I mean, you know...
Well, did you... You know, Marty asked, did you read the Zirin article?
No, see, I didn't get a chance to, because I have it on my, you know, a bookmark, and I have to read it, because I know that the Oklahoma situation is just nasty. But you broke it down quite well without rehashing it, the sort of, we want taxpayer money for our billionaire toys, and all we're going to give you is $8 an hour job and just be happy with it. I mean, it's the fact that these cities do it over and over again, it just is an indication of where manufacturing used to be. Now this is what the city founders...
Right, your $30 an hour job has become an $8 an hour job selling popcorn.
Right, and we're still enriching a few people. I mean, this is plantation economics. This is what this is. The thing in Santa Clara is beyond disgusting. When you think about right next door, they voted to decimate benefits for public workers in San Jose.
Yeah, and the and also Marty asked earlier. He said, "Should Sandra call? Ask her to tell you about Blue Diamond in Sacramento."
Oh, God. I mean, that's just ongoing. You know, I'm not really up on the latest, but the last time I went to a progressive Democrat meeting, that's always an issue. And I don't know what the... I don't know.
Well,
what
I mean, drop a little background, would you?
Well, with the... Well, I just know that they're constantly trying to unionize and... It never seems to work out.
I mean, this is like the company that produces the homey, folksy ads about all we ask is, you know, eat one almond a day or something.
Yeah, and they, you know, they're constantly sort of not dealing with their workers, and there's like a lot of accidents there. I mean, I don't really know all the details, but I just know that it's, you know, in a constant sort of state of, I don't know. It's just not a great place to work.
And it stays a mess. Well, when Marty said that, I didn't know what he was alluding to, but I saw Blue Diamond. I was, oh no, not the almonds.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, it's big business here, and I mean, I'll see if I can dig a little bit more, because I don't know if they've had any recent developments, but I know it's just not, you know, a very nice place. That's for sure.
Well, I tell you, I think you will find it telling to go back. Do go back and read the Zirin column. And I don't want to ruin it for anybody. But there is a passage in there. I mean, if you ever wanted a picture of the absolute obscenity of the 1%, Dave Zirin recounts the story of a dinner in that column that will make you gag. Just reading that, I mean, he is a very persuasive writer, and he's got me about half okay if LeBron gets his ring.
Yeah, oh no, I can only imagine, you know, because look where it is. And then what happened with the Seattle, you know, all that leaves a bad taste for sure. But yeah, Zirin is always good with the sort of breaking down the economics of the stadiums. He's been writing about that for years.
And so, right, you know, what was that, $870 million in Santa Clara?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it boggles the mind, especially when, like you said, they're quite happy to decimate public services, you know?
I mean, where would they like to take... I mean, because this is not a story I've been following, where would they threaten to take the Niners? Bogalusa?
Well, no, to me, it's just...
L.A.? I mean, would they do the Oakland-L.A. Walk? I mean...
No, listen, it's all smoke and mirrors, because if they could get a team in L.A., they would have done it by now. That is the truth. You see what I'm saying? Because it's a giant market. So if the glorious NFL could have a team there, they would. So that constant threat is just a joke when it's made to these poor cities that are, like, desperate to keep these teams, you know? Because L.A., thank you very much, seems to be doing quite well.
I mean, I'm just trying to imagine the Niners threatening to move to Memphis.
Oh, you know what? Bye-bye. I mean, they're leaving San Francisco. They're leaving Candlestick because the San Francisco said, you know, well, they didn't say, but I'm saying it for them, don't let the door. You know what I'm saying?
really? I mean, they made the pitch to San Francisco, and San Francisco sent them crickets?
Well, San Francisco tried. God, they've been working on something for years. I mean, even when I was living in San Francisco, which was a long time ago, they were trying to make a deal to build something new. So,
because I guess historically, the Niners originally played out at the Presidio or something, and then they built the Stick.
Yeah, I don't know how old the Stick is, and it is quite nasty, but. You know, it's just a priority. I think that, San Francisco is the kind of city that, we like the Niners, but it's San Francisco.
Right. The Niners don't define San Francisco the way the Packers define Green Bay.
Right. I mean, I'm not saying that it won't be an economic hit. But I would say.
But that's the thing. That's the thing. Based on all the data I've seen, it wouldn't be an economic hit.
Right, and I would say that because the last time they worked on a deal, you know, San Francisco offered to give them all sorts of land and all kinds of concessions, and it still wasn't enough because enough is when the taxpayers take all the risk. That's
right.
Enough.
Right.
Okay, so San Francisco said bye bye, and I guess Santa Clara is a. Willing to take it on. I mean, Santa Clara, I just don't understand why. Anyway, it's...
Well, I find a little teensy bit of irony, Sandra, in the fact that it's Santa Clara. Because, after all, the origin of the very concept of corporate personhood originates as a mere clerical footnote in Santa Clara versus Union Pacific Railroad.
Well, yeah, it's all California, yeah.
And so, you know, it's just a little asterisk dropping down from the heavens from the goddess of irony.
Well, you know, the Giants, I mean, mind you, they gave that land to AT&T or whoever owns that, whatever stadium there, the new one. But it's more private money than public, and it's a beautiful stadium. It's fantastic, and when you go there to watch a game, you can rest assured that, you know, you're just being entertained, and it's not sucking the city of San Francisco dry.
Right, and I think that's an important part of this discussion, Sandra, is to remember, as I tried to point out, that when we talk about the pillaging of the commons, we're not just talking about, I don't know, letting Monsanto build a plant on top of Old Faithful. You see what I mean? That when we give away $870 million in tax breaks, that is a very, very equally plain manifestation of the pillaging of the commons. Well, because that's $870 million you don't have to do for the citizens with.
Well, I'm happy to report that, you know, they bent over royally in Sacramento, and it still wasn't enough, and so the deal here is dead. And, yes, I'm saying it. Goodbye. I don't care about the Kings. You know, screw them. Because they were trying to run a game on the citizens here, and we already voted no twice, you know, for their little tax hike. And so it was just never ending. But I think now it's finally dead. So I'm glad to report that.
And by the way, one of your favorite people, David Stern.
Yeah.
Did you see where he caught? He and Jim Rome got into it today.
Oh yeah, no. Isaac sent that to me. I was howling because he don't even know. I mean, Jim Rome don't care. The more controversy, the better for his sort of dumbass clone routine. That's tired, so I'm sure he welcomes the controversy.
Have a take and don't suck. Right.
Well,
yeah.
Kind of like, how old are you, Jim?
Right. And what is he? What is he, 50 now? 55?
Well, he must be 46 or something. But I don't know. I used to find that kind of amusing, but now it's kind of, yo, it's a bit not what a near 50-year-old should be going on about. But anyway, I'll stop on Jim Rome. But what happened? Who won the?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that anybody won, but the coverage that I'm seeing tends to come down harder on Stern than on Rome.
Oh, right.
Because
yeah, okay.
it all has to do with the NBA lottery and this sneaking suspicion that everybody has, is the article I read, that the NBA had its thumb on the scale for New Orleans.
Well, because they own the team. That's why everyone's fish-eyeing it, because it's not owned by, you know, one percenter. It's owned by the league, so of course...
Who just sold it off?
Well, okay. Well, I knew it was something tricky about. Plus, they stopped the trade. You know, when Paul could have gone to L.A., they said no, and so L.A. didn't get that point guard. You know, so it's been shady for a while, I guess. But didn't he say, "Are you still beating your wife for something crazy?"
Yeah. Because Rome wouldn't walk away from the question from him. Offering the well, of course we didn't, and Rome presses it again. Well, when did you stop beating your wife?
Oh shoot, well, that's funny. I missed that whole.
Oh, by the way, Andy offered up a little bit of background on the whole Blue Diamond thing. He says the Blue Diamond plant is part of the San Francisco Getty fortune.
Oh, okay.
The workers, many from Mexico and Latin America, have had a tough time getting a union in place. There's also the complication that some of the workers may not be documented, so management uses a heavy hand to suppress union organizing and dissuade workers from getting involved in the union movement. You get involved with the union and you lose your job. And then Andy says, as Sandra says, the saga seems to never end at the Sacramento plant. And you know what that reminds me of more than anything else? You remember the meatpacking plant story out of Iowa from a few years ago? It was I forget the name of the company, but it was a kosher meat works, and they were using undocumented labor, and they had repeatedly used really, really dirty illegal tactics. Shalom Rubashkin was the guy, and he's doing prison time now. It was one of the ones where there was a pleasant outcome, because you know he went to the stir over the way that they were treating working people, but there was this huge raid. They took people who were alleged to be undocumented and literally rounded them up in cattle pens at the state fairground somewhere in Iowa. Oh, it was a filthy thing. But yeah, they used the same kind of tactic, shorting wages and threatening to turn people into the Icemen if they made any uniony noises. And then, these stories are legion, and it's only a function of memory that, what was it, a Hormel plant or an Armor plant, where I remember this story very clearly. They were the Icemen went in and separated out the workers by light skinned versus dark skinned, and decided that the light skinned people were here legally and the dark skinned people weren't, even when some of the dark skinned Latinos had union cards that you can't get without proof of citizenship.
Well, you know, but that reminds me, you know that they're speculating that the Supreme Court is going to uphold some of the more odious aspects of the Arizona law. Have you heard this?
Yeah, I have, and it's incredibly disturbing.
Well, and it goes hand in hand with your sort of race to the bottom with the state, like they do with the tax credits for these corporations. Well, it's the same situation with the immigration laws. I mean, that's the whole thing.
And I find it interesting that they are willing to do that blue pencil routine with SB 1070 in Arizona, and yet the conventional wisdom with regard to the Affordable Care Act is that it either all stands or it all falls.
Well, I'm sort of, I don't know. I kind of think, you know, there's a lot of, you know, interesting polls popping up and all kinds of stuff. The pressure's on the Supreme Court, so we'll see if they overturn that.
I can't forget Antonin Scalia. You don't expect us to read all this, do you?
Well, yeah, but, you know, I think, you know, the bite that they're feeling behind the Citizen United is interesting because, I was listening to this interview with Sheldon Whitehouse. I guess he's one of the senators from Rhode Island.
Yeah.
And he was describing it, you know, in very stark terms that they used, they used skills that they didn't have, like assuming that a disclosure would happen. And now it hasn't happened, and they're looking like right idiots with this United decision. And he was comparing it to Plessy and all the other sort of horror decisions that have come down.
And yet, have you noticed that the insurance companies have come out?
They ain't saying shit.
Yeah. Well, they've come out in a couple of days. Well, we'll keep some of the nicer provisions.
No, it's going to unravel if it's not held up. So, I mean, we'll see, but, you know, I think that they may not look at the polling, but, you know, remember, I forget the quote with Alexander Hamilton and the Federalist 78, you know, they don't have no sword, they don't have no purse, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I think Supreme Court is definitely on a downslope right now as far as what kind of institution they're viewed as. But anyway, listen, I'm sort of in the middle of trying to move, if you can imagine.
Oh, no.
Yeah, gotta go.
All right. Take it easy, Sandra. See ya.
Bye.
Bye now. Sandra calling from California. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program. And nobody? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Jeremy in Burlington.
Well, hey, Jeremy. How you doing?
Not too bad. I called because I heard the other night you talking about, first off, I'm one of the legion out here that's not ready to say President Romney. Not even close to saying that.
I tried a couple of times, and it turns into vomit.
I completely understand, and I know he's got the welcome to Walmart mentality. He'd like to see everyone working at Walmart, Target, or Kmart. He'd love to see that.
Absolutely.
That's his wet dream. That would be what he wants to see happen. And I can tell you from my own experience working at Walmart for a stint, when you go through training, it is no shit. They try to put a non-union video on you.
Oh, yeah. They, in fact, it's compulsory viewing, isn't it?
You have to watch it, otherwise you can't even work for them. And I remember I was in my teens, I'm in my 30s now, but in my teens, it was good almost 10, 12 years ago. And I sat down, and I didn't raise a family with all union workers, state workers, train workers, you name it. They've all been union workers. And I sat down and Nathan told them, this is pretty much effing propaganda that you're doing this. And they said, well, no, this is how our company works, and this is what we believe in. So I said, OK, the last two, and I watched it. And it is true, and I worked there for, I think, probably the better part of the year for $8.50. Now, I am one of the many that experienced the whole, when you're done working, you're not done working. I remember the
right, you have to work off the clock.
Yeah, you punched out, and then you went back to receiving and picked up all the returns for the day and put them back on the shelves. And that could be for another 2 hours. And now I think about, actually I was a minor at the time, so I didn't have to do that as long as other people did. But I remember shortly after I got done there, they were sued in Florida for that, and they lost mega, like, $25 million, which is nothing to them, but they lost that to a group of people that had to sue them for that.
Well, because even in a place like Florida, that's a rather overt violation of the wage and hour laws.
Well, yeah, no, completely. But I distinctly remember being part of having that happen, being told to punch out and go restock the shelves, and I've always remembered that. And I don't know if you caught it. At some point, it was either, I think it was early this year or very late last year, I told my lawyer about this, that there was a Target that opened in somewhere in New York, and the workers decided they wanted to go union, and Target said, oh, hell no, closed the doors and left the state.
Yeah.
They just closed their shop and fired everyone and left the state.
And, you know, they did, didn't they do the same thing? Well, they, you know, and this is typical practice for them. It is corporate culture for them, Jeremy, because way back when, you know, they used to have people. Walmart used to have a meat cutting shop, and way back when, some butchers in Texas voted to unionize.
Well, they still have a meat shop, Bob. It's the workers.
Right. Well, I mean, they've got a meat case, but. You can't get a ham sliced at Walmart.
Right.
You either buy the ham that Walmart has, or you go somewhere else.
Right.
They don't grind any hamburger there. It comes vacuum sealed with a little label that says "with flavor added." And for all I know, that's pink slime or water to add. Because I learned early on, if I bought hamburger at Walmart, it shrank more than most, and it was full of liquid. But the point was, those butchers in Texas voted to unionize, so rather than recognize a single union shop, they shut down the meat cutting operations in every Walmart in the United States and retooled so that everything comes in pre-cut. I would not buy, and of course I'm sure the vegetarians and the vegans would say, well, you know, I mean, it's a step in the right direction, Bob. I would not buy a cut of meat from Walmart if it was the last cut of meat. In this county, in this state, or in this nation.
My girlfriend shops at Walmart. I try not to. I'm not free from sin. I shop there occasionally for an electronic when they can beat Best Buy or something, but I try very little to shop with these people just for multiple things I know they do.
I used to go there because I could get 100% Colombian decaf, and I've explained this before, that I couldn't get over at the Union Kroger shop. But you know, lucky for me, anything that I start buying, Walmart immediately discontinues, so I have no reason to go in there.
Unfortunately, I wish I could say the same most of the time. But I was going to say, I know back when Sam Walton was alive, even they treated their truck drivers back then better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yes. Walmart became the evil thing. I mean, Sam was never a friend to working people. I remember when his first and oldest employee died a few years ago and died without a pension, without health care, you know, the Walmart way. But he also moved into communities very, very slowly. But after he died, I mean, the cancer metastasized. Because the Walton heirs, each of whom became worth something like $27 billion apiece, suddenly decided that $27 billion wasn't enough and it needed to be 50 or maybe 100.
Right. And what I was trying to say was that back when Sam was still alive, he did have a slightly better policy. Not that he was ever really the working man's friend, but his truck drivers could park on the premises and have a safe place to sleep at night between deliveries. Nowadays, they can't be seen on the premise unless the back dock is loading and then you're going out of that place. And that was
right, and don't let the door hit you. Exactly.
Pretty much once you're done, I don't want to see you, you're a dirty truck driver. And that kind of stuff sickens me when I think about it. And then I think there was a story last year about his daughter or something being a DWI crash or pulled over with DWI, and she basically can buy her way out of it and say she's sorry, sorry, sorry. And we all know that money can buy your freedom sometimes. In her case, it probably will.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
It just sickens me, but I don't have much else. Just want to come
Let me thank you for your offer of contacting your congressional delegation about the AIC Act. I really appreciate it.
I actually did. I have a friend who works directly for Bernie, and I asked her to ask him to be a original co-signer of it. So we'll see what happens.
If he was to be an original and introduce it in the Senate, it would be magnificent.
Bernie's a powerhouse in Vermont. We love him up here. We're not going to trade him for anybody.
I'd sure like to have a Bernie down here. I can't begin to tell you. I'm jealous.
He's a good guy.
All right. Take care, Jeremy. Good to hear from you.
You too, thanks.
All right. Bye now. Yeah. About 8.5 minutes before the hour. And I guess, for the most part, that takes care of this prayer meeting Wednesday edition of The Horn. More stories, things we could have gotten into, but we will save them, I guess, for a thorn in the side Thursday. Just a little note, and I hate to do this, but I gotta. This continues to exist, this little experiment in broadcasting. By virtue of listener contributions. Between last night and tonight, there has been one. And we are extremely grateful for that. But when we go 2 days without any input, it begins to get a little dodgy because, you know, we didn't put that $2,500 number out there arbitrarily. It's what it takes to keep this going from month to month. If we were putting out a number that paid people, we would be trying to raise something on the order of $15,000 or $20,000 a month because that's what people are worth. And we would have never made it through the second year of broadcasting. So if you can hit the PayPal button, it would be much appreciated if you did. It's at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address. They both work equally well, and we are very much appreciative, all of us, for your support that keeps this going. So, if you can, and if you please. Closing out with a note from Michael in Norway. He says, with regards, and this is a comment that I made earlier in the program, he said, with regards to looking back at these times in which we live from the future, I wouldn't disregard the possibility of the Horn becoming an important historical resource. In that sense, the archives at White Rose Society could be considered a journal of the times in America from a liberal perspective. I hope, says Michael, the Horn journals are well backed up. I don't like the thought of these neo-fascists gaining absolute control, perhaps seeking to wipe such an important document of the time. Keep your podcasts stored, Hornies. They might be important someday. And that is so very true. And thank you for the input, Michael. I think about that a lot. I think about things like redundancy. And we have next to no redundancy. When I have to go away, there's seldom any, because, you know, John Fox is one of the very few people I would turn the microphone over to, and he is very busy these days working on some amazing projects that I hope we can share with you soon that you will greatly enjoy. When I go away, we run reruns. And I'm sorry for that, but it's how there's no redundancy. I was reading today about we've been experimenting with some Skype calls, and they sound pretty good. But I was reading today about a new box from the Comrex Corporation, which we've got one of here, and is, well, let's see, it will officially be 7 years old next month, and it's been repaired two or three times, and, well, you know the drill. They've got a new box out that would be wonderful to have because it is certified for all, see, this thing's just supposed to handle plain old telephone service. And we have some problems sometimes. But the new thing is certified for VoIP and POTS and Skype and all manner of stuff. And wow! Wouldn't that be cool? But it ain't going to happen anytime soon. Because right, because our focus remains squarely in the realm of just keeping the wolf off the porch. Keeping the lupine pest away from the door. It all works out to about 5 cents per hour of broadcasting. So it's still, I'd say, as compared with some, it's a pretty good bargain. It's a great bargain. If it was a quarter an hour, if you compare it to the likes of the right-wing filth that pours into the public's airwaves every day, it's a huge bargain. And it is amazing because it happens because you insist that it continue to happen. And for that, we remain thankful. So have a wonderful remainder of your day or your evening, and we will get together tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for Thorn in the Side Thursday. My thanks go out to you first and foremost for keeping this on the air, and more importantly, for sharing that most finite and precious of things, your time. It is amazing and humbling. My thanks, of course, go out to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky, our moderators in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy, to Reverbo operating behind the possum line and deep cover behind the cornbread curtain, to John Fox, previously mentioned, for all that he does, and to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Everything that happens here goes through a White Rose server, and you receive it because of the undying dedication of Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks, of course, always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and stoptheache.org. Go to both places, learn about the ache campaign, learn about what you can do to help stop Appalachia's agony. It's as simple as a phone call to your elected representative, your member of the House of Representatives in the Congress of the United States. And it is much appreciated. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.
with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, a minute past six here in the Eastern Time Zone. On the 14th day of June 2012. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you may be. Good day, Earth. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. A little slice of what we call conversation radio. And welcome to it. The Horn is available to you, just by way of a reminder, depending on how you're listening, on a variety of platforms. We have, for instance, the home website itself, headonradionetwork.com, where there are a couple of different ways to listen. We have whiterosesociety.org, where you can listen to the stream, or, as well, the home of the Horn podcasts. Podcasting and live streaming available at iTunes Radio and iTunes as well. And streaming available at Stitcher Internet Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio, and a variety of other platforms that I have not yet had time to research. We're out there. We're everywhere. And it is free and easy for you to listen or for you to recommend to others that they listen. This, of course, is what we call Thorn in the Side Thursday. And I got a feeling it's going to be a big one. Or a long one. Or a big long one. Leave alone, Bob. We've still got spillover and leftover material from the night before. See, that's what happens when, especially in a political season, when you are simply awash in morons, right-wing weirdos, repiglickins. But, you know, one of the other things, one of the other things that we also pay attention here to here are the ordinary rights of ordinary people. And with that, I wanted to mention a new report that is out lately, bring it to your attention, and perhaps suggest that you might want to take action accordingly with it, because it's a means of making some of your consumer choices. And you know, I hate that word consumer, right? But making some of your consumer choices a little bit more ethical. What am I talking about? I can answer that. I have it right here. The name of the organization issuing the report is ROC. And ROC stands for Restaurant Opportunities Centers United. They are a group that is concerned about and dedicated to the rights of some of the most oppressed, some of the most put upon, some of the most hard-worked people in this country. Namely, restaurant workers. It's a brutal business. And it's brutally hard work. You may recall a couple of weeks ago, a couple of days ago, our buddy Ron in Raleigh mentioned such practices as wage theft, working off the clock, that sort of thing. Well, it turns out that that is notoriously prevalent inside the restaurant industry. May I suggest that there's one place you don't want to get anywhere near? On this list of so-called ethical restaurants, among those scoring the very lowest is an outfit called Darden Restaurant Group. They are, of course, a conglomerate that runs a number of different national chains. They own Red Lobster, Capital Grill, Longhorn Steakhouse, and Olive Garden, among other things. They are, according to people who have worked there, notorious for wage theft, for discrimination, having people do what is called side work, such as rolling silverware, filling salt and pepper shakers, and other custodial duties, as they're described, without clocking in and being paid to do it. It is theft. It is a violation of the wage and hour laws of almost every state. Darden also asks people who work for tips, and therefore a much, much lower hourly rate, to go ahead and do work that people who are not tipped and have a higher hourly rate should be doing. It is a fact that 7 of the 10 lowest paid jobs in the United States are restaurant jobs. It's hot, it's sweaty, it's heavy weight lifting, cumbersome, dangerous, and restaurant customers are not the friendliest people in the world. And yet at the same time, someone waiting tables always has to meet you with a smile as if it is the absolute signal joy of their day that you and your little tribe of munchkins have walked into the establishment to dine with them. Oh, rapture, oh, joy, they smile. While at the same time, they are making, on average, nationally, kind of sit down for this one, would you? The national average for a restaurant worker is $2.13 per hour. $2.13 per hour, with the rest of it supposedly being made up in tips. Which, remember, one of his first acts upon taking office was Ronnie Reagan's decision to tax tips. And tipping as a whole is an entirely separate category, because with someone making $2.13 an hour and tips being shared out among not just the wait staff but the other tipped wage staff, you've got to have a lot of traffic in a restaurant in order to make up that disparity. An awful lot. Who else didn't score well on the diner's guide? Starbucks, McDonald's, Arby's, Hooters, Denny's, and that's just the beginning of the rather vast list of other employers who don't offer their tipped employees anything more than that $2.13 an hour, who don't beat the regional minimum wage, who don't offer paid sick days, who don't offer any form of health insurance. Good God. I don't know about you, but it will be a cold day in hell before, well, like I can afford to, before I go sashaying into a Longhorn Steakhouse or Red Lobster. I've never even heard of Capital Grill. And Olive Garden, with us, your family. If by family you mean we work people like we don't have to pay them anything. The Rock United Restaurant Ethical Diners Guide can be found at rockunited.org. I found it interesting, one of the because, well, and these two things kind of dovetail. It turns out one of the programs that I actually bother to watch on the on the television, Anthony Bourdain's series on the Travel Channel, No Reservations, is going away after 8 years. Hard to believe it's been 8 years. It's going away, but it's not leaving the television. It's leaving the Travel Channel. Get this. CNN has hired Anthony Bourdain. We shall see. We shall see. I feel kind of bad for him because that means sooner or later he's going to have to spend some time on set with Wolf Blitzer, and that's just icky. Ugh. No, but they reached out and hired Bourdain because they were looking to get away from having their programming be all news, which I found a little bit interesting insofar as CNN is supposed to be all news. But with the advent of things like Radio Rwanda in the U.S., Fox, then having programming about, or MSNBC's persistence in spending entire weekends airing alleged documentaries about life in prison. Well, I guess CNN kind of needed to find some fill some space with it. And they can't just run Nancy Grace forever over on Headline News. But the program, his documentary, and it really is, it's far more about people than food, will be showing up on CNN, and I'll certainly give it a try. But one of the things that I picked up over the course of watching that program as long as I did is the utter necessity of tipping in the United States. And, of course, that's borne out in this Rock report, rockunited.org. They write in the report itself, with a federal minimum wage of $2.13 for tipped workers and $7.25 for non-tipped workers, the median wage for restaurant workers is $8.90, just below the poverty line for a family of three. This means that more than half of all restaurant workers nationwide earn less than the federal poverty line. Yeah, Marty, you keep plugging Samantha Brown. If somebody has to, I guess you're the guy to do it. Percent of the more than 4,300 restaurant workers surveyed in the Rock report do not have paid sick leave. Women, immigrants, and people of color have lower-paying positions in the restaurant industry. There's a $4 wage gap between white and persons of color. It goes on and on and on. The first thing that the report notes is that the federal minimum wage for tipped workers needs to rise above $2.13. Donna Edwards, a Democrat from Maryland, has worked with Rock to introduce the Wages Act that increases the tipped minimum wage to 70% of the regular minimum wage, i.e. about $5. Hoo-wee! Don't spend it all in one place! But it is important to note, as others have said, if you can't tip, you shouldn't be eating out. There is also pending legislation called the Healthy Families Act. That's a federal bill that would provide 7 paid sick days to every worker in America. Sounds like communism to me. Or probably something that, I don't know, it's French. Speaking of which, it is habitual that if I go out, I know because I had friends who ran restaurants, that, you know, you do tip. And the minimum tip line is about 15%, and 20% should be standard. But lo and behold, guess what you don't have to do when you go to a civilized nation? Tip. This was made clear to me in a couple of different places on my recent journeys. Oh, no, Bob, you don't have to tip. He is earning a living wage. Tipping is not done here. What a foreign concept that someone working in the food service industry would actually make enough to be able to go home and feed their families. Shocking, huh? So, some restaurants, very few, did do very, very well but the ones who did are noteworthy. Avalon of Detroit, Michigan, baked goods and quick serve items did well. Washington, D.C.'s Ben's Chili Bowl, a cultural landmark, did well. They're very hard to find on this list. Busboys and Poets, a chain throughout D.C., also did well. It's a long list. The Chaya restaurant group in California did quite well. That's Asian fusion cooking. If you're looking for a burger, two of your better opportunities are In-N-Out Burger and which we ain't got, and Five Guys, which we do. Colors of Detroit, Michigan, and New York City International Fine Dining scored extremely well. Comida of New York City scored well. Cowgirl of New York City scored well. Kraft, American Traditional Fine Dining, nationally did well. Crema of New York City, Mexican, did well. And there's a lot of scrolling in between these names. Elephant Bar, a national chain, international and casual dining. I've seen one in Washington, D.C., I think. El Fuego, headquartered out of Philadelphia. Quick serve Mexican. Good. Good Girl Dinette. The Gorballs. Gorilla Cafe. Homegirl Cafe. Houlihan's. These people deserve to have their names mentioned simply because they are trying to do well. As previously mentioned, In-N-Out Burger, Inspire Barbecue, Jack Rose, Jose Andres, under the names Jaleo, America Eats Tavern, Zetonia, and Oyamel, Mexican, casual. La Palapa, Las Chicas Locas, La Petit Zinc, local, out of L.A. I mean, there's a Morton's, the steakhouse nationally. Nectar out of New York and Niao's Creole Cafe out of New Orleans. Again, a reminder, stay out of Olive Garden. One If By Land out of New York City did well. Outback Steakhouse, sorry. P.F. Chang's, nope. Panera Bread, sorry. Papa John's, no way. Pizza Hut, the Italian casual outfit, Pizza Aiolo, probably mispronouncing that. Headquartered out of Oakland. Yes, good. Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen. No. Red Lobster, previously mentioned. Stinker. Red Robin Gourmet Burgers? Nope. Romano's Macaroni Grill? Sorry. Ruby Tuesday? The Russell Street Deli out of Detroit, Michigan? Yes. Sbarro? The little pizza? Nope. Oh, and not surprisingly, Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. Frequent former advertiser for the bloviating junkie, the oxymoron, Rush Limbaugh. Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, home of right-wing dining. Nope, they stink. Don't want your money in there. You can go to Slow's Barbecue in Detroit. They do well. Not so much at Sonic. Of course, I try to stay out of Sonic here because when I noticed driving by one day, well, actually, I placed an order and canceled the order at the window when I saw their Friends of Cole sticker. Steak and Shake? No. Starbucks? No. Subway? Sorry, Jared. No. Sugar Bliss in Chicago is recommendable. They're a bakery. No TGI Fridays. No Taco Bell. Texas Land and Cattle Steakhouse. No. Texas Roadhouse. No. Texas Steakhouse. No. Yes and yes to Union Square Hospitality Group and Todai. No to Tony Roma's. No to Uno Chicago Grill. No to Waffle House. No to Wawa, no to Wendy's, no to Whataburger, no to White Castle, no to Yard House, no to Zaxby's, yes to Wolfgang Puck's Grill, yes to Yola, yes to Zingerman's Deli, and Zingerman's Roadhouse. And that takes us to the Z. And done. So, and that was by no means the complete list. But we do need to understand that consumer choices, purchasing choices, are in fact ethics choices. Didn't see Togo on there, Marty. Sandra. So true. I bet Herman Cain had something to do with the slave wages as head scum lobbyist for the Restaurant Association. Oh, sure, you can, yeah, you can bet that they'll fight that idea of a $5 an hour minimum wage for tipped workers tooth and toenail because, well, you know, a good restaurant server is a starving restaurant server. Because if they're not starving, they might not just sit still for having wages stolen from them, right? Yeah, exactly. But it is thorn in the side Thursday. And we will be rather busy, I suspect. In the midst of everything else that we talked about last night, we miss a couple. I guess one of these days, when I get old enough, I will take great pleasure in getting up incredibly early every morning and getting my day started by watching C-SPAN's Washington Journal. Haven't gotten there yet, but I may. Because I guess it can be beneficial. Grover Norquist was on Washington Journal day before yesterday? And he got punked. He got punked by someone calling in, because they've got the Republican line and the Democrat line, right? Somebody called on the Republican line and dinged old Grover. Let's give it a listen.
Hear from a caller right here in Washington, D.C., Ralph, a Republican. Good morning.
Hi, how you doing?
Hey, Ralph.
I got to thank you for keeping my taxes low. I used to work for a living as an engineer, and now I am an investor. And I'm making seven figures, and I'm paying virtually nothing in taxes. And I just find it hysterical because I don't pay any Social Security. I don't pay any Medicaid or Medicare because I exceed that limit. And I get capital gains, so I'm only paying 15%. But, you know, these people who are middle class and blue collar and they're voting for, this tax thing, I think it's great. I think they're stupid. I call them soundbite monkeys because they'll believe anything. But, you know, I'm getting rich and, the middle class is getting screwed and the lower class is getting screwed. But hey, you know, keep it up, man, because I'm going to be filthy rich, and those suckers are going to be living in slums by the time we get done.
Those whats are going to be living in slums? Aren't you grateful for internet radio where we don't have to go boop? Because, you know, that's just truth-telling. Grover sits, I know we're talking dancing about architecture here, but in the video, Grover sits there smiling because dude is saying everything he wants to have said. Because that's America. I'm getting rich, and the middle class is getting screwed, and the lower class is getting... And that's when Grover starts going, wait a minute. And then Grover fires back.
Right. Ralph, I think you're a very nice left-wing twit, and you're calling on the Republican line and taking up other people's time. And that's really a little dishonest. If you want to come in and make the case for left-wing politics...
Left-wing politics. I see. Is that what it is now? Is that how we have redefined our national debate? that being able to stay in the middle class is now left-wing politics? Because I'm glad to have that definition. I'm glad to work with that. Oh, Jesus. Where's the Acme Corporation when you need them, Grover? I mean, can't we get you some rocket roller skates or instant hole or... don't you want to launch yourself from a catapult or anything? You want to kind of take Grover to Toontown, don't you? You know, where anvils just fall out of the sky. Yeah, he's upset because Ralph claimed to be a Republican and punked his ass. That was dishonest. No, no, Grover, what's dishonest is trying to rip off the entire American economy for the sake of a teeny tiny handful of wealth holders. That's dishonest. But he's got his talking points at the ready.
We've been discussing that. We've had some nice left-wing guys call and ask grown-up questions and not lie about who they are and take some Republican who wanted to call in and ask a question off the line because you fibbed and claimed to be arguing from a Reagan Republican perspective and made up a story about who you are. You know, I got rich and didn't pay taxes, which would be fascinating. You could make a lot of money selling that secret. In point of fact, as people know, the top 1% of income.
But you see, that's the way a Republican operates. They lie. The guy didn't say he doesn't pay taxes. He says he doesn't pay anything in Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid on the vast majority of his earnings, because that's true. And Grover has to blow past that because Grover has no answer for it. Because the simple fact of the matter is, we would not have a Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security problem in this country if the 1% paid the same as the 99% for those programs. The guy also said he went from working to being an investor, so he only pays 15% because it's called capital gains, which is one of the reasons that people like Willard Romney only paid how much? In those very, very limited releases of tax returns, how little did Willard Romney pay? Yeah. What, 14%? And then he tithed or something, whatever you call it, to another 10 to Salt Lake City. Yeah. There's a little bit more, though.
Murders in this country pay 40% of the federal income tax. The top 50% pay 99% of the personal income taxes. So we have a steeply progressive tax.
No, we don't. You caught the front end of that. 1% pays 40% of the income taxes. But they are not paying the same percentage of their available wealth as we are. And that is definitionally not progressive, Grover. Go to hell, you sorry, sad, free, anti-American freak. That's regressive. That's regressive. And again, a larger question for C-SPAN. What is this man doing on television? Why is this man not booed, jeered at, hissed at, and spat upon everywhere he goes? Any human being, because remember, we're talking, you know, right wingers and pig lickings, they love them some America, right? The minute we start bombing the snot out of some country with brown people living in it, they're the first ones with their little yellow ribbon magnets on their Escalades next to their global warmer vanity tag. Thanks, Vince. They love them some America, the pig lickings. And yet here's a man who whose most famous pronouncement ever is that he wants to weaken the federal government to the point that you can drown it in a bathtub. You know, like some sort of mafiosi hit. Like something a psychopathic murderer would do in an Alfred Hitchcock film. And that, in the twisted, backwards, upside-down, sick world of the Republican Party, is deemed being a good American instead of outright un-American. Yeah, okay, Marty. Actually, I'd rather drop Grover into the dip and see if he dissolves like Judge Doom did. Isaac noting, Morton's from the restaurant list? I had this lady tell me I have to take her to Morton's. I told her, kiss my ass. No way I'm paying $165 for a dinner for two. And now, especially realizing that the people who are serving you that dinner for two ain't getting paid worth a damn. It's all going to the Morton's 1%. Eye-opening, isn't it? Really, Sandra? Is he? Not to mention queer as fuck. Now, is Grover a closet case? That might explain some of it. The closet is a hateful, hateful place that makes people very uncomfortable and... Yeah. I did not know that. Randy noting, all of the exiled liberals are on Russia Today TV on the internet. No irony there, is there? Lots of irony there. Yeah, who all? I know Hartman's over there. Does some RT work. Oh, dang, if only I had a face made for television. Nah, not really. I like this format. I like this medium. I like radio a lot more than I do television. Because it's a lot easier to have interaction. The camera makes you want to be still. But it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I certainly thought that applied as a thorn. So too this. Coming out of Michigan, and I got a number of emails from a lot of you today about this story. It is apparently now illegal in Michigan, or at least in the Michigan legislature, to say vagina? Yeah. Debate had yesterday on one of the most hateful anti-choice bills in the country, effectively a complete ban on women's reproductive health choices in the state. And bless her heart, a member of the state House of Representatives by the name of Lisa Brown, a Democrat, got right to the heart of the matter. She, I don't know, Albert. Do we add Lisa Brown to the list? Hi, Lise. Hey, Vern. Yeah. Hi, Van. Because the heart of the matter is that the soul of the anti-abortion debate is always, it always has to come from a position of compulsory religious practice. This was the scene in the Michigan legislature.
Representative Byram offers one amendment identified as Amendment 2I.
The question before the House is on the adoption of Amendment 2I. The clerk will open the board. Members may vote at their desks. The amendment is not adopted. Are there further amendments? Are there... Representative, you are out of order.
This legislation, it was three banker boxes. There are more than 10,000 Kurds. This legislation does a lot of things, Mr. Speaker. It regulates business, requiring exorbitant insurance policies to be purchased, which will result in clinics closing doors, causing people to lose their jobs, and denying women their constitutional rights. Yesterday, we heard from the representative from Holland speak about religious freedom. I'm Jewish. I keep kosher in my home. I have two sets of dishes, one for meat and one for dairy, and another two sets of dishes on top of that for Passover. Judaism believes that therapeutic abortions, namely abortions performed in order to preserve the life of the mother, are not only permissible, but mandatory. The stage of pregnancy does not matter. Wherever there is a question of the life of the mother or that of the unborn child, Jewish law rules in favor of preserving the life of the mother. The status of the fetus as human life does not equal that of the mother. I have not asked you to adopt and adhere to my religious beliefs. Why are you asking me to adopt yours? And finally, Mr. Speaker, I'm flattered that you're all so interested in my vagina, but no means no.
Members, I do ask that you respect the decorum of the House.
I was so disappointed. I received a...
She violated decorum of the House by saying vagina. Jesus, they've turned into a Monty Python skit in the Michigan State House. All I said was that that was a lovely piece of halibut, and it was good enough to give to Jehovah. Oh, he said it again! Stone him! The lady said vagina and violated the comity of the House. Penis, 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 penis! Can we say that? Oh, well, all right.
Letter prior to us bringing House Bill 5711 up. And it's disappointing not just to me, but to the citizens of this great state. I had a letter from the Right to Life letting us know that there were technical changes in 5711. You know, it's so nice to know that Right to Life is helping write the legislation. As a medical professional, we should be talking to our obstetricians. We should be getting input from them, Mr. Speaker, not from outside entities like a Right to Life. I think that's wrong.
Take a walk with me, if you will, to the OBGYN, where we disrobe and we lay on the bed and put our legs up in stirrups as the doctor, a certified doctor, decides to make sure make sure that we are not only healthy, but the baby is healthy. These bills do not take into accountability the health of a woman. These bills, after 20 weeks, basically says that my health is not important. And I do not believe that this legislative body should endorse such. Thank you, Mrs. Speaker.
Thank you.
At least she didn't say vagina. Now, I played that clip for you because, honest to God, I think somebody's listening. It was a few nights ago that Kate, out on the front range, suggested that the women of this country go and revisit the famous ancient Greek comedy Lysistrata, in which a central plot device is that until war is ended, women declare that they will no longer have sex with the men. Well, guess what? As a result of the behavior of the House The Republican leadership of the Michigan House of Representatives said that the use of vagina violated the House's decorum, and that Representative Brown will no longer be called upon in future debates because she said vagina. I know, I've got the wrong accent, but as we discussed last night with Vince, I can't do that Michigan accent. One of my teachers in high school came straight to our little Alabama high school from Michigan State University, and we didn't think we'd ever heard anybody talk so funny. You know, us rednecks. But even with 4 years with her, never made it work. Couldn't get the accent down. But no. Representative Brown may keep kosher all she wishes, and she may be, and she may observe Jewish law. Next thing you know, we'll have to be listening to the Muslims in here telling us what their Sharia law tells them to do. But she will not be called upon in future debates. The first woman, during the calling of the amendment, another woman stood at the podium raising her hand. She wasn't even saying vagina. And was ignored by the men folks. State Representative Barb Byram confirmed as well that she's been banned from speaking in recognized debate because of her outburst. What was her outburst? She apparently it's a problem with the letter V. Because she used the word vasectomy. She had an amendment that would have subjected men to the same sort of regulatory control for their reproductive organs as women. Now, there were six mugwump Democrats who joined with the Repiglicans, voting Wednesday by 70-39 to push these anti-woman bills forward and out of the House and propel them, I guess, over to the Senate. And that's where we come to Kate's previous comment. And maybe it turns out that it's Michigan State Representative Rashida Tlaib who's listening, in which case, hey, Rashida, good work. She's from Detroit, and she called on the women of Michigan to withhold sex from their partners until the Repiglicans recall this hateful, misogynistic pile of dung that they think is protecting the life of the unborn dead fetuses. Representative Flaib said, "We're launching a war on women. Stop having sex with us, gentlemen, and I ask women to boycott men until they stop moving this through the House." And why not? You know, you want something you can control, get something you can blow up, guys. Just as has been previously noted on the program, don't bite them in the neck or they're liable to fly out the window. So, I come back to a previous query. Where is it safe in this country? Where is there a state that the Republican Party is not trying to control someone's life under the guise of getting government off our backs? The question is particularly salient to women. Where are you safe in this country? Where can you attend to the needs of your reproductive system without some god-awful, hateful, misogynistic man trying to meddle in your medical decisions? The one woman who spoke was right. They don't need the advice of Michigan Right to Life. They need the advice of doctors. But then again, that's science. And we don't, and as we know from North Carolina and Virginia, we don't want no science. Won't be using no science to measure sea level rise, and we won't even use the word sea level rise because that's liberal code. Oh, don't blame me for that one, Marty. Don't bite them on the neck or they'll fly out the window. That's strictly Jim. But for the life of me, well, no, what is it? I don't have the experiential background to speak to this. Because insofar as I am shining and glowy, or glowing and shiny, with white privilege, and not just white privilege, white male privilege, I can't in any wise tell you what it's like to walk around knowing that wherever I am, there is some right-wing Republican out there who is fascinated with my genitals and the workings thereof. Representative Thomas had it right. They are fascinated with her genitals and with the genitals of all women. I don't know if it's hatred or jealousy or some admixture of the two, but the fascination is very much real. And so if you want to talk about that, I mean, you know, there was a bit of a cultural dust-up a while back over something that happens in families of color called the talk. A speech commonly delivered to young African-American black males about what they can expect from American white privilege society. Is there a version of that for women as well? Where mother or grandmother sits down with daughter and says, "Sweetheart, you're beautiful and you're bright and you're intelligent and you're as American as anybody, but there are some things you have to understand about white male-dominated American culture. There are things that are just going to happen to you in the course of your life. If, as we hope, you will live a long, healthy, and fruitful life, you will, along the way through it, have to deal periodically with the weird fascination, the mixture of hate and jealousy or whatever that attends Republicans who never learn to mind their own business. And we'll see you as nothing but a baby-making machine who is, by definition, unequal to white males. Does that talk happen too? I can't help thinking that it does. If it doesn't, it probably should. because there's some necessary reality in that. Now that bill in question, the Michigan anti-abortion bill, it has been rightfully referred to as the nation's worst. Worse than anything Mississippi did. You know, the sad thing is, I never wanted to append the word Stan to the name of Michigan. But with this, guess what? You kinda have to, don't you? We have to let Michigan take its place beside Mississippi Stan and Alabama Stan, so that now it's Michiganistan. The Speaker of the Michigan House, who made the decision to declare that Representatives Byram and Thomas I'm sorry, Byram and Brown, Byram and Brown, Lisa Brown. Yeah, Jace, not Jason, Jace, J-A-S-E. Maybe it's pronounced Jafe, I don't know. Jace Bolger, or is it Bolger, I don't know, was the one who made the decision to silence the women. To declare that the representatives for literally thousands of Michiganders would no longer be allowed to speak. He didn't take away Representative Byram and Brown's right to speak. He took away the right of their constituents to be heard in that representative body. Fascism much? Representative Speaker Bolger? Jace? When the little women learn to maintain the decorum of the house, because after all, the decorum of the house is far more important than any dignity we would afford, well, you know, them. Well, then maybe we'll allow them to talk some more. But this Michiganistan bill really is a piece of crap. Odd that it comes on the same day as Fox attack blonde Gretchen Carlson up and walked off the set while Brian Kilmeade was talking about women are everywhere, we're letting them play golf and tennis now, it's out of control. Over at Radio Rwanda, Gretchen got up and walked off telling Kilmeade, you read the headlines.
And it got better.
That's a good answer, Mike. All right. Headline time.
Women are everywhere. We're letting them play golf and tennis now. It's out of control.
You know what?
What, Gretchen? Tell us.
You know what?
She's out.
You read the headlines. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Take them away.
Finally.
Take them away.
Okay. Moving an all-male crew.
In all your glory. Go for it.
In all my glory. Now your headlines. She needed a shower.
She needed a shower. You know, those women, they get so emotional sometimes. She needed a shower. She didn't look particularly shower-needing. But no, just a simple reminder about the Michigan anti-reproductive rights bill. there's stuff out there that makes very clear what is wrong with it. Among other things, get this. In Michiganistan, it becomes a crime for anybody to coerce a woman into having an abortion so that doctors will have to give them a questionnaire saying, has anybody told you you've got to have this here abortion? So the doctor has to become a detective. HB 5711, which you heard under debate, also requires doctors to carry a $1 million liability insurance policy if they perform 5 or more abortions every month, or if they've had more than 2 civil suits in the past 7 years. That's in addition to any other medical malpractice insurance they carry. And yet, oddly enough, this is the Republican Party who don't like that medical malpractice. Tassel loafered wearing trial lawyers out there getting all rich when people win what Dim Leader once referred to as life's lottery by being butchered by a negligent physician. And once again, the 20-week mark is in the Michiganistan bill. No abortions, even for rape and incest victims, after 20 weeks. I guess that... well, it's too much. It's too much. But that is where we find ourselves beginning this Thorn in the Side Thursday. There's more. Oh, there's more. And we will get to it in the next 2 hours of the program. We will also get to your phone calls. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. We have also recently added, in addition to that number and the direct dial number 304-658-3333, we've added Skype. And we've had a couple of Skype calls in the last couple of nights, and they've sounded pretty darn good. So you are welcome to also look for the Skype handle Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, and you can reach the program that way at no cost to nobody except for whatever we're all paying for our interweb tubes. It's not a big truck. Email comes in, BobKincaid@gmail.com. Have you been to the chat room lately? Head on RadioNetwork.com chat room. It's free, it's easy, and you should give it a try. All that having been said, we'll take a little break. It is Thursday, Thorn in the Side Thursday. That means we have a report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. The Green News Report is on the way, as are, I hope, your calls. Light it up now. It's much easier to get conversation in instead of hustling toward the finish line at the very end of the end of the program. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
You made up to love me. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, June 14, 2012.
Doesn't seem to me that they need $24 billion of our collective money as taxpayers when they'll make $1 trillion in profits over the next decade.
Big oil still fighting to keep its billion-dollar taxpayer subsidies. OPEC fights to raise oil prices. Americans for Prosperity fights back against extremist environmental kite-flying school children. Plus, remember this?
Gas prices, they are spiking. It will only get worse as we head towards summer.
$4 a gallon.
$5 a gallon.
$6 a gallon.
$7 a gallon.
$8 a gallon.
But you got to be tuned into the right channel to hear those forecasts.
Hey, Fox News, what do you say now that gas prices have fallen?
Yep, that's what we thought. All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We have been able to almost double our investment in clean energy.
Doubling down on green energy now, good campaign platform, or does it sound a bit desperate? We report, and you can decide.
Wonder which one Fox News viewers will decide. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, before we get to the Green News, some business here. We want to welcome aboard our newest affiliate, Mike Check Radio with Adam Hebert. You can listen to Adam on Saturday nights over at Ustream.tv. Glad to have you on board, Adam.
Yes, thanks, Adam.
Now, I read an amusing article this morning, Des, from ClimateRealityProject.org. The fossil fuel companies apparently are concerned that global warming and climate change is going to hurt their bottom line. For example, the Trans-Alaska pipeline is beginning to sink into the melting permafrost earlier than expected. All kinds of examples where the oil industry is now concerned about having to pay a price for what they are doing to the planet.
It's really amazing, isn't it?
Does the irony never stop? What do you have for us today?
Well, we do have an oily report today, but first, Friday is Global Wind Day, and school children in New Jersey and around the world will be holding kite-flying rallies to celebrate wind energy as a source of clean energy. But don't worry, Americans for Prosperity is on it, and they are planning to protest the subversive, radical, extremist kids' attempt to poison America's pure, sweet relationship with oil. I am not kidding. The right-wing Tea Party front group Americans for Prosperity, who are bankrolled by the billionaire Koch brothers, are sending 6 buses of protesters to a kids' kite rally in New Jersey on Friday. They're, quote, going toe-to-toe with environmental extremists to combat their radical agenda.
Ha! That'll show those pesky kids.
It sure will. In more advanced wing nuttery, remember just a few months ago when Fox News and right-wingers were blasting President Obama for high gas prices and predicting they'd skyrocket by summer?
Just how high could those gas prices go? Try $5 a gallon for starters.
By the end of summer, maybe $6.
And maybe $7.
How does $8 a gallon sound?
Surprise, surprise. Gas prices have now fallen to around $3.60 nationally due to ongoing global economic weakness. But the right wing is now remarkably silent now that the price of gas has dropped.
Go figure. We should also point out that the all-time high for gas occurred under George W. Bush in July of 2008, something that Fox News keeps forgetting to report.
But gas prices may be headed back up soon. At the regularly scheduled meeting of OPEC over the next few days, they will be discussing the drop in oil profits. It's of great concern, and they will decide on whether they will cut back production to push those prices back up.
And that will be Barack Obama's fault as well if they do.
Big oil in the U.S. is fighting to keep its billions in taxpayer subsidies, although the rapid run-up in gas prices earlier this year pushed big oil's profits to near record highs. Oil industry representatives were very clear at a Senate Finance Committee hearing this week that they would simply cut drilling if they don't get their incentives. Here's oil man Harold Hamm of Continental Resources in response to a question from Senator Kent Conrad of North Dakota.
You've testified here that if that were taken away, in your company alone, you believe there would be a one-third reduction in drilling. Is that what your people have concluded?
It is. I'm not a tax accountant. You know, I'm an oil founder. But that in our company, it eliminates about 34-35% of our drilling activity.
Well, New Jersey Senator and Democrat Bob Menendez wasn't buying it.
The reality is the marketplace has dictated that they will make more than enough money to continue to pursue their exploration, whether here or abroad. It doesn't seem to me that they need $24 billion of our collective money as taxpayers when they'll make $1 trillion in profits, not proceeds, over the next decade.
And it should be noted that Harold Hamm has donated millions to a Mitt Romney super PAC while also acting as an official Romney campaign energy advisor.
Since when did the music man go into the oil business?
Oh, no, that's oil man Harold Hamm, not music man Harold Hill.
He's just a bang, beat, bell, ring, and big paw, great go, neck, another rip, roaring every time a bullseye salesman. That's Professor Harold Hill, Harold Hill.
Oh, my mistake. Different guy, different industry, similar scam. For much more on that scam and all of the others that we didn't get to today in our Green News Report, please check out greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report. We rely on you to help us keep telling the truth over your public airwaves. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oh, we got trouble. We're in terrible, terrible trouble. That game was the 15-numbered balls. It's the devil's tool.
Devil's tool.
Oh, yes, we got trouble, trouble, trouble.
Oh, yes, we got trouble.
We're the team.
We're
the rhyme it with P.
Right.
And that stands for pool.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Approaching 17 minutes past the hour. Did I hear that right? I do a lot of reading through any given day. I missed the one about the teabaggers attacking the children flying kites. And I would have been okay with continuing not to know that. I mean, we have to know what these evil freaks are up to. But really? Now, we understand that the teabaggers have been a self-parodying organization all along. But they're going to pay to send 6 busloads of people to go toe-to-toe with children flying kites? What, Edith? Sometimes I just want to scream, I can't stand it, and go running out the door. So earlier, the Michigan legislature reduced itself to a scene from Monty Python's Life of Brian, and now we find that the teabaggers have reduced themselves to an episode from Seinfeld. You remember the episode, I'm sure. The one where Kramer was working on his black belt in karate, and it turned out that he was progressing so rapidly because he was kicking the butts of 10-year-old little boys and girls in karate class. Until the little boys and little girls finally ganged up on him and whipped his butt. Yeah, the teabaggers can't exactly go toe-to-toe with people who have brains. Or at least adult brains. So they're going to try, because they failed miserably most, debate-wise, sorry. So they're going to lower their expectations a little bit and try to increase their chances by harassing children for flying kites. Now, we know we have little Repiglickin' lurkers out there. Is this your Repiglickin' party? Aren't you proud? Some of your fellow Repiglickin' teabaggers are going to go and harass children for flying kites tomorrow. Damn. I mean, if that don't make you feel all patriotic. I don't know what does. I'm going to have to stand up and sing. I'm sure they'll be listening to this on the way down to take on the kite flyers.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life.
Including my kites.
And I had to start again with just my children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today.
Yep.
'Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away.
Oh, wait a minute. That flag blows in the wind, Lee Greenwood. That communist wind that those little liberals are gonna fly kites in and destroy your freedom, and you won't be glad to be you're an American where you at least you know you're free, Lee Greenwood. There's a Lee Greenwood thing, Betsy? Oh, I'm gonna regret learning about this one too. I didn't know what I was doing. I'm sorry. All right. Oh, how did I miss that? Okay. Let me go find that. I got wrapped up in doing some writing last night. May not have seen it roll in. There's a Lee Greenwood thing. Oh, I can't find it. Send it again. I got to know this now. We're going to put everything on hold till I find out. Thank you. A Lee Greenwood thing. Oh no. Every now and then that song rears its ugly head. Yeah. I'm just asking. If you had some free time and you were in New Jersey or around New Jersey, that's where it was going to be, right? New Jersey? Would you go and fly kites with the kids? Or would you go with your little tri-cornered helmet and your muzzle-loading shoot-'em-up gun and scream at the children for flying the kites? This is one of those little easy personality tests. There it is. Thank you, Betsy. Oh, yeah, I did see this. Yeah, that's what happens when one of them anti-colonialist Muslim Kenyans with a deep-seated hatred of white people is in the White House. What will we tell the children? Yeah, there's a principal in New York who won't allow a little precious kindergartner to sing God Bless the USA. The blog post says, liberals like her literally make my blood boil. It irks me to no end No one will be offended by that song unless they are an enemy of the country. And if so, too freaking bad on them. Well, some people are offended by the song, and they don't have to be an enemy of the United States. They just have to be a proponent of good music. Lee Greenwood put it best when he said that he would tell this principal that there is a difference between worshiping and respecting, paying tribute. No one is asking that she worship the flag just to respect it and what it stands for. Which, incidentally, ironically, is the Constitution of the United States. Which guarantees freedom of religion. Which guarantees that you don't have to, among other things, and the Constitution has been, the constitutionality of this has been ruled upon, stand up and say the Pledge of Allegiance. You don't gotta. You don't have to take oaths on the Bible. And no, there is no difference between worshiping and respecting, paying tribute. If you are respecting and paying tribute to God, that is the very definition of worshiping God. And they are the same thing. Yeah, thanks for the reminder, Betsy. Well, coming to a legislature near you, a Republican mandate that we all stand when Lee Greenwood's awful little trite, hackneyed, miserable, shitty song is played. I mean, it couldn't be any more trite if it was rhyming moon, spoon, and June. Honestly. This in from Kate on the Front Range. Subject line, a little throw up in the back of my throat. I just popped in to log in and say I'm not here tonight. I'll catch the show on archives in the morning. Have been giving some thought to what you're talking about. I hope the rest of the show is better than Mr. Greenwood's pap grin with boiling blood. Jim gets it. Go fly a kite. What the hell are these idiots about? The real wind comes from their hot air for every orifice. Oh, I know, they'll get there and all them little right-wing teabaggers will get there and start teabagging, blowharding, and the next thing you know, the kites will be flying further and farther and faster and higher, and, Mommy, I'm out of string! By the way, I just got a note, from Ben over at White Rose. The podcast, for those of you who want to download it later, the podcast might be a little bit late going up because I'm going to have to send the file to Ben. He tells me he had a, and this is a horrifying phrase, had a software meltdown. Yeah. At any rate, lines are open. Light them up if you want to. We're going to go forward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Bob.
How are you, Kevin?
Kevin, good, doing good. Hold on just a second, though. I want to pass on a few words to the Michigan State Senate.
Oh, okay.
Vagina, vagina, vagina.
Yes.
And so there you are. I violated the decorum of the Senate and apparently said a very dirty word about someone's anatomy.
You know what?
I don't know about people anymore.
You know what needs to happen, and it would kind of have to happen on the fly, but some female member of the Michigan House of Representatives needs to have her last name changed to Vagina. Or better yet, if there is a progressive male member of the Michiganistan House of Representatives, he needs to have his last name changed legally in a court process to Vagina, so that every time he's called upon, the Speaker of the House, what's his name, Jafe Bolger, will have to say, "The chair recognizes Mr. Vagina." Isn't that perfect?
That would be interesting. Although, with the way that chair works, he probably would come up with a reason for not recognizing the man because he's violating decorum in the House.
Oh, right? But see, we could put in the courthouse pleadings that the man was changing his name because God told him to.
Yeah, that might work.
And so, by not recognizing him, Jafe Bolger would be then violating his religious liberty by refusing to call him Mr. Vagina.
That is a thought.
Oh, it's like this all the time, Kevin. The wheels just turn and turn and turn. They're a little rusty sometimes, and every now and then we throw a sprong off the sprocket, but no, they just turn and turn. The smoke comes out, and that would just be brilliant, wouldn't it?
It would work for me. I personally think all the female representatives ought to go up there and use the word in every one of their speeches. And as far as him not recognizing that one woman, I would imagine she has some sort of court case available to her because he won't recognize her. Discrimination would be the start.
I honestly don't know the answer to that, Kevin, because each one of those bodies operates on an entirely separate set of rules. And the court would probably, I'm guessing, rule that the body has the right to maintain order in the means it best sees fit.
Except for the fact he's refusing to recognize her because she used that word. And I could see, you know, in the right-wing world where you might censure someone for that, but to refuse to ever recognize them again is a bit extreme, and I think you would have grounds to say that that is discrimination based on a person. Again, you could go back to that religious liberty thing, you know. Her religious liberty is being violated because she believes in abortion, and therefore that's a religious belief. She could state that, you know, just like that Jewish woman you had on. I think maybe it was the same one, but the one that's
Ms. Brown.
Yeah, I back in my more religious days, I was listening to a Christian talk show, and a guy called in and quoted from the Bible, and it plainly shows where the woman's life is more valuable than a fetus. And, you know, of course Christians pick and choose anyway, which is bad enough, but at least if you're going to pick and choose and say you believe in the Bible, then what that young man quoted should be listened to, don't you think? Of course, they don't want to recognize the old Jewish laws of kosher because, oh, that's over with now. We don't have to recognize them. And that's where it goes. You get into this, you know, picking and choosing and everything else. And I've come to believe that religion is the drug of the people, and that's why these people are so successful in doing what they're doing, because it is a drug to people, plain and simple. You know,
I think it goes past that. It was Marx, was it, who said that religion is the opiate of the masses?
Yep.
It goes far beyond that, though, because, you know, an opiate, you just sort of lay around and stare at your shoes kind of quietly and dream weird dreams. But what religion does to people is to empower them to think that their prejudices and their bigotries are the perfected declaration of the Almighty. And that is much more dangerous than any opiate. I guess it's the different, you know, Marx said religion is the opiate of the masses. I say religion is the angel dust of the masses because it makes them crazy and go chew people's faces off. I mean, you did see, well, I mean, you're aware of that story, right, Kevin? It turns out that one of the zombies who was attacking people was religiously insane.
I actually didn't. I've been busy with things here in the Springs the last couple days.
Yeah, his potential fiance, girlfriend, whatever, said there were never any signs that he was anything like that. He was a perfect churchgoer or whatever. And for me, that just, you know, that statement does not set up a dichotomy. It is in fact complementary. Because when you buy into that kind of thing, and suddenly the voice in your head declares that it is God, and it's time for you to go and chew somebody's face off, well, if it's God saying it, you're more likely to do it, aren't you?
Yeah. You see that all the time with paranoid schizophrenics. Either God, a dog. What was Berkowitz up in New York?
Yeah, dog.
That was what his... But the dog was speaking for God, you know, and... So, and now Berkowitz says he's a born-again Christian, and therefore he's...
Of course he is!
Role. Yeah. But you don't see Jim Dobson using him like he did Ted Bundy, if you remember that.
No.
So, yeah. I have my own personal... faith, belief, or lack thereof, but at the same time, I don't try to force that on people, and that's probably the biggest difference between those of us who are progressive and the right-wing extremist, because you can do anything, like you said. All you have to say is, God told me to do it, and, you know, you're fine. And, you know,
that applies directly to, for instance, that constitutional amendment that was rejected Tuesday in North Dakota. If you said it was a function of your religious liberty, no matter what it was, then you had to get a pass.
Yep.
You know, including stoplights and traffic, other traffic signals, and who knows what else. Of course, this is on the heels of legislation that was attempted some years back that mandated that children would have to be given passing grades even if they got the questions wrong, as long as they said that they were inspired to answer the question the way they did by Jeebus. You know, 2 and 2 is 5. I'm sorry, Johnny, you're wrong. No, I'm not. Jeebus said it's 5.
Yep. I don't know what the answer is. I know we just have to keep fighting. I wanted to mention to you, they are talking, they didn't do a vote on it this Tuesday, they're doing it 2 weeks from now, on fracking within the city limits of Colorado Springs. And obviously I'm against that, but I just find it incredible. We're in the middle of a drought. We just had another wildfire about 30 miles east. West of here.
Right, by all means, the whatever scarce water is left, let's use it. Let's use it drilling.
Yeah, and
I'm just checking now. You're in Colorado Springs, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Do you have this thing there called wind, Kevin?
Yep.
Does the sun ever shine on Colorado Springs?
More often than not.
And generally speaking, Colorado?
More often than not.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, I wasn't absolutely certain, but I thought so. And consequently, couldn't Colorado put up a whole bunch of... I mean, couldn't you put up a whole bunch of wind turbines and solar panels in Colorado and pretty much take care of Colorado's energy needs?
that is being attempted, but obviously not enough because we've got a drill. You know, it's the drill, baby, drill thing. I talked to someone last night who thought it was perfectly fine to drill where they're talking about drilling because they use clean water to drill. And I was to the point that I didn't even bother to respond to this guy because he was so unknowledgeable of what fracking does and how much poison it puts into the water and how much water it uses. I mean, we're in the middle of a drought, but yet, let's bring these people in here to drill and take what water we've got and contaminate it and then put that back into the streams and rivers and water and rain and everything else. And, you know, I just find it sad. I don't know how the council's going to vote, but I want to be there on the 26th when they take that vote because I'm definitely against it. It doesn't affect me right now where they're drilling, but who's to say that the water table, how the water flows, might not flow directly into the reservoirs that I get my water from.
Yeah, it does directly affect you. It does.
Yeah.
It directly affects everybody in Colorado who uses water.
Yep.
See, that's the one thing. That's there's this hierarchy of human needs. Maslow defined them as food, shelter, you know, that kind of stuff. But if you break it down a little further, what is it? A human being can go 30, 40 days without food, right?
Yep.
We can go a couple or 3 days without water.
Yep.
We die in about 3 minutes without air.
Yep.
And so water and air are the two things that are most likely to be fouled by the hydrocarbon industry, even outside of any discussion of climate change.
Yep.
And with that in mind, one would think we would prioritize the cleanness of both of them, and yet through organizations like the American Petroleum Institute or the Petroleum Institute of America or Americans for Oily Greasiness or whatever it is, they actually advocate to poison the two things without which humans die fastest, water and air, in reverse order.
And those people that live by there, I would be up and on, you know. I'm one of those type of people, just like those Native Americans up there, I forget where it was, but in Minnesota, I think, where they were protesting those trucks coming through their territory. And that's the way I'd be if I lived right down there by that where they're talking about fracking. I'd just stand in the road. You know, now they may run over me, but you got to take a stand sometime. That's the thing I am most concerned about is people, a lot of people just aren't willing to take those stands anymore, you know. And Tuesday, we did a protest about our transportation. They were wanting to cut the express bus between Denver and Colorado Springs. And there were five people out there protesting. And that service is a choice service that people pay $22 a day for, and it's very popular. But there were five people out there protesting it. There were a lot of speakers, but five people actually protesting with signs. And that's what most concerns me, because people are going to lose their jobs if they get this service. You know, and the money that comes back into Colorado Springs.
But Kevin, if you can get rid of the service, that'll be one more little bit of communism that's gone from America.
Exactly, yes. And that's for our major.
And the free market will find a solution, because the free market, the invisible hand of the free market, solves all problems.
Exactly, yeah. it solves all problems as long as the 1% get theirs and the 99%
get theirs too.
Right. But what we're talking about with get theirs is totally different.
Yeah, it is an entirely different definition. You're absolutely right.
Exactly.
Well, Kevin, it's awful good to hear from you. Thanks for getting out and being active and taking part in your civic process. I know it's a bigger challenge for you than for possibly some other folks, but you do it anyway, and it is much appreciated.
Well, thank you, Bob, and definitely I'm glad I can sit and listen to your show today without coming in late for it. So I appreciate what you do as well.
Thank you very kindly, Kevin. You have a good evening.
You too, Bob.
All right. Bye now. Kevin, calling from Colorado Springs, and bear in mind, if you ever are tempted to say, well, that may not directly affect me, if you sit and think about it for a little bit, you'll find that it does. It really does. The number, of course, is 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Direct dial 304-658-3333. And, of course, Skype available now to the handle Bob Kincaid Horn on your Skype account. Bob Kincaid Horn. It's that easy. I got a story, and I agree, I got a story from Fritz in Arkansas earlier today, and I have to agree that this is not necessarily, this has Moran Monday written all over it, but I can't hold it for that long. Fritz merely sent me this story with the comment, I really should stay away from the internet on my days off. Yeah. The story is making its way around the state of Arkansas right now to either approbation or the whatever the opposite of that is. The Ozark Teabaggers rallied on June the 9th in Mountain Home, Arkansas. One of the speakers was Inga Marler, or, and I mean no disrespect, it may in Arkansas be pronounced Inge, I-N-G-E. Inga, or Inge Marler, is a Teabagger board member. And she gave some sort of an opening address. And you know how it is when you're talking to a crowd like that. You want to get them warmed up to you. You know, the things they teach you at Dale Carnegie about after dinner speaking and stuff. You want to give them a little chuckle and put a smile on their face before you begin really giving them the message. You want to give them an icebreaker joke. Now, being a teabagger, you can just imagine what the icebreaker joke was. Well, don't guess. I've got it here for you. Inga, or Inge Marler, steps up to the podium. And in order to get the teabaggers warmed up to her, offered the following. Strap in. Okay, understand this is going to be, you know, in dialect.
Okay. The new definition of democracy. A black kid asked his mom, Mama, what's a democracy? Well, son, she says, that'd be when white folks work every day so us poor folks can get all our benefits. But, Mama, don't the white folk get mad about that? She says, they sure do, son, they sure do, and that's called racism.
Oh, clap! Clap, you goddamn dumb little teabaggers! Yeah, ho, 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 I don't care who you are, that's funny. Yeah. Fritz went on to note that the population of the county where that joke was told is 0.2% of color. Did you notice the dialect? I don't know why she didn't just go all the way. I mean, the teabaggers wouldn't have cared. They probably would have approved. Why didn't she just go all the way and do it in blackface? There were 500 people there for that Baxter County, Arkansas teabagging rally. And you heard how they just laughed. Don't that make the white folks mad? Well, yes, it does, and we call that racism. Jesus Christ. Arkansas Stan. You know, I halfway wish I hadn't long ago deleted that soundbite from Tony Snow declaring that racism is over in America. I guess nobody ever got around to telling Inge Marler that there are by far more white folks on welfare than persons of color. In the audience there of those clapping, laughing, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking freaks was Senator Missy Irvin, who is a Republican there in Arkansas. She tweeted about the event while she was sitting in her little teabagging chair. She said, "Great rally this afternoon for the Ozark Tea Party in Baxter County. Great job at Richard Castor." Richard Castor was the person who had invited Inge Marler to speak. Because that Inge Marler, she's a pistol. She'll say anything. She don't care what anybody thinks. A black kid asks his mom, in case you had a hard time hearing the audio. A black kid asks his mom, "Mama, what's a democracy?" "Well, son, that be when white folks work every day so us po' folks can get all our benefits." "But, Mama, don't the white folk get mad about that?" "They show do, son. They show do. And that's called racism." Shall we explore the underpinnings of why a teabagger would find that funny? Because, you see, a teabagger thinks that paying taxes are the same thing as being lynched. That is how divorced from reality your average teabagger is. Because racism isn't really something. Racism isn't really the pernicious devil that stalks to this day our society. It's not really. It's just a matter of white people getting mad because the colored folk are getting their benefits. And so if somebody happens to get dragged behind a truck for a while till they're dead or hanged from a tree or their house burned down or shot, or that's just because the white folks are tired of paying for those people's benefits. Jesus, what a disgusting pile of excrement Inge or Inga Marler is. naturally, she did catch some heat, and she apologized. Mm-hmm. When she was finally called on her nasty little bit of filth, she said, "Well, I'm sorry I told the joke. I just found it on the Internet." You know what? There's another very famous joke that's out on the Internet. Maybe she could try that one with the teabaggers next time. It's called The Aristocrats. I'm sure the teabaggers would just laugh. Don't look it up. Not if you're just eating. It's deliberately disgusting. But this comes on the heels of something else, and you know, it's one of those West Virginia moments that I'm not particularly proud of. It turns out that my state may be the most racist state in the Union. Not Mississippi Stan. Not Alabama Stan. Not Michiganistan, but Appalachistan. And it's sad. Jesus, it's sad. Seth Stevens Davidowitz did some Google analyzing. In what I think is a fairly novel piece of work, Seth compared Americans' Google searches with their voting patterns. He concluded in a blog post at the New York Times, he said, "If my results are correct, racial animus cost Mr. Obama many more votes than we may have realized." He writes, "Barack Obama won 52.9% of the popular vote in 2008 and 365 electoral votes, 95 more than he needed. Many naturally concluded that prejudice was not a major factor against a black presidential candidate in modern America." Again, Seth Stevens Davidowitz says, hold up. He begins by explaining the problems of trying to analyze racism in data. Because even the racists, unless you're just a beer-swilling skinhead laying drunk at some monument somewhere, you're generally, you know, wearing your little 88 t-shirt. You're not going to say, "Well, hell yeah, I'm a racist." I mean, there's just not a whole lot of those people. There's enough, more than enough. They're there. And Lord knows they vote Republican. But there aren't as many of them as the folks who just are and don't want to admit it. Seth used a new tool he describes as called Google Insights. And it tells researchers how often words are searched in different parts of the United States. He says, of course, the results are not perfect, but the function works, as he describes it, remarkably well. Here's how it works. Google, aggregating information from billions of searches, has an uncanny ability to reveal meaningful social patterns. God is Googled more often in the Bible Belt, Lakers in Los Angeles. He continues, the conditions under which people use Google online and mostly likely alone, not participating in an official survey, are ideal for capturing what they are really thinking and feeling. You may have typed things into Google that you would hesitate to admit in polite company. I certainly have, he says. The majority of Americans have as well. We Google the word porn more often than the word weather. You see where this is going? He says many Americans use Google to find racially charged material. He describes the unpleasant task of ranking states and media markets in the United States based on the proportion of their Google searches including the word, and I'm sorry, I don't like to use it, but it is the reality of what he was doing, including the word nigger. This word, he says, was included in roughly the same number of Google searches as terms like Lakers, Daily Show, Migraine, and Economist. Really? Migraine? Economist? Lakers? Daily Show? That is not to say that they were Googled conjunctively. That word was Googled conjunctively with those phrases, just as often as. Consider the pervasive impact of The Daily Show. How often must that be Googled? Or the number of people who suffer from migraines? Or in a floundering economy, the number of people who look up economist or economics? He says a huge proportion of the searches I looked at were for jokes about African Americans. He says, I did not include searches that included the word nigga, N-I-G-G-A, because these searches were mostly for rap lyrics. Data came from 2004 to 2007. He says, because he wanted a measure not directly influenced by feelings toward Mr. Obama. He said, from 2008 onward, Obama becomes a prevalent term in racially charged searches. And then this, Bob's little oh-hell moment. The state with the highest racially charged search rate in the country was West Virginia. Before anybody starts feeling smug, the other areas with high percentages included Western Pennsylvania, Eastern Ohio, Upstate New York, and Southern Mississippi. So taking that data, Seth Stevens Davidowitz went to work. He said he tested whether Mr. Obama underperformed in those areas. He statistically predicted how many votes Mr. Obama should have received based on how many votes John Kerry received in 2004, plus the average gain achieved by other 2008 Democratic congressional candidates. The results, he says, were striking. The higher the racially charged search rate in an area, the worse Mr. Obama did. He offers up as a comparison Denver, Colorado, and Wheeling, West Virginia. Mr. Kerry received roughly 50% of the votes in both markets. He says, based on the large gains for Democrats in 2008, Mr. Obama should have received about 57% of votes in both Denver and Wheeling. Denver and Wheeling, though, exhibit different racial attitudes. Denver had the fourth lowest racially charged search rate in the country. Mr. Obama won 57% of the vote there, just as predicted. Wheeling had the seventh highest racially charged search rate in the country. Mr. Obama won less than 48% of the Wheeling vote. Adding up the totals throughout the country and racial animus cost Mr. Obama 3 to 5 percentage points of the popular vote. Racial prejudice, he concludes, gave John McCain the equivalent of a home state advantage nationally. Here's where it gets scary. Mr. Stevens Davidowitz says